Welcome to the One Question Podcast, brought to you by Wabi Sabi Studios. I'm your host, Michelle Cox, and I love having unlikely conversations on uncomfortable topics. It's a huge passion of mine, so much so that I wrote a few books a while back that challenge people's notion on living a life more unconventionally. This entire podcast stems around one question. If there was one topic you wish society would talk more about, what would it be?
Trust can't really exist without patience on the journey and without compassion for yourself, because you have to be patient to see the growth and you have to be compassionate with yourself in order to enjoy the journey, because otherwise we just think, well, why the hell would I do any of this? It just all feels too much.
The lady you're about to meet has a unique story. Not letting speech difficulties define her as a child, she overcame early setbacks to master her craft and become an incredible keynote speaker. I came across Annalise McCarthy when she was schooling those on social media who had trolled her for the attire she had chosen to wear on stage. Not one to conform, Annalise eloquently put them in their place, and I was intrigued to find out more about this fabulously articulate woman. Annalise is a woman speaking and confidence coach with over 15 years of public speaking training. She's the owner and founder of Her Speaking Coach, where she makes speaking fun, empowering, and sexy for women all over the globe. A world champion speaker, Annalise has performed on state, national, and international stages and believes that speaking is a skill for life that all women can master. Let's meet the gorgeous Annalise. Annalise, it's so lovely to get to sit down with you, especially when you are here joining me from beautiful Bali. So thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, Michelle, thank you so much for having me. I am gloriously enjoying my time in the warmth while it's lasting.
Oh, that's great. And so wonderful. You know, this is a great perk of having your own business, right? That you can work in such an exotic location. So fabulous that you're making it work for you. So let's kick in. If there's one thing that you wish society would talk more about, what would it be?
Michelle, I want to acknowledge when I received this question from you, I had so many things that came to mind. And I've really narrowed down on, I think, one word that contextualizes and summarizes these different themes that came up for me. And that word is trust. And the reason I've landed on the word trust and I want to explore the notion of trust is because, firstly, as a speaking coach, I am coaching women how to trust in their voice, trust in their message, trust in their storytelling, trust in their vision. There's a lot of trust there. But also on the flip side of that, I think as a society, we talk a lot about the word confidence. But in my lived experience and what I'm now learning, so many experiences of women that I've connected with and people in general that I've connected with, the difficult part of confidence is actually the part that comes before confidence, which is the trust in yourself. And I think it's a sticky conversation. It's a complex conversation. And it's not a very sexy conversation, because trusting in yourself takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of discipline, takes a lot of consistency. I had the absolute honor before we started recording, Michelle, you'd shared with me a few beautiful insights into your own story. And I can only imagine in your life what that trust would have meant to you when you came to a point where you felt like you could trust in your body, you could trust in your health, you could trust in your ability to make decisions as a woman and have autonomy over those choices. So there's so many layers to this topic, but I think that's, for me, the biggest topic that I would love to see us speaking more about is this notion of how to build true, authentic trust in yourself and what that actually means.
Wow, that is a big topic. There's so many things that come up with for me that I want to ask you about. But if we talk about your work, you're predominantly doing coaching, helping women to find their voice in this sort of space. Is that just a natural space that you fell into, or is it because you feel that women like need more help in this area? And to your point about the trust element, is that, you know, when do we lose that? Is it beaten out of us, or is it, you know, that we're trying to conform to society's norms, or what's your take on that?
In essence, I don't think I fell into this at all. Speaking and finding my voice was actually a very difficult journey for me and something that did not come naturally. And I'm actually really grateful now as a speaking coach that I didn't have it easy, because I find that I can empathize and I can relate a lot more to the women that I work with because I worked in corporate and because I worked in male-dominated environments and because I didn't have experiences where my voice was respected or I was valued in a room, and I had to really fight and crawl my way in those spaces to feel heard and to feel seen. So it became very evident that it was something that I needed to do, and it was something I wanted to pursue for my life's work, because I started to see how needed it was, and because I had met one too many women who were just fucking brilliant at what they do, so intelligent, remarkably passionate, inspiring, zesty individuals. But when push came to shove and they were asked to speak on something, or they were asked to express their opinion or to give their thought, something just would completely take over their body and they would shut down and they wouldn't be able to deliver it impactfully, or they wouldn't be able to influence a room. And I think, especially when I was in law school, I studied a double bachelor of law in Mandarin for 5 years. And it was very interesting for me in that experience, watching very, very intelligent people stand up in a room and deliver a summation or deliver a court hearing or deliver an argument and shake with their piece of paper and feel nervous speaking to a group. And it's without judgment, Michelle, but I'm sitting there thinking, hold on a second, like, these are people who are like some of the smartest people coming into this degree, studying this, and they don't have the communication skills to carry themselves in the room. And so luckily in my background, I'd been essentially forced into public speaking training since I was little, because I had crippling social anxiety and a really strong lisp. And so I had to do that training from an early age. And that's when I really recognized, wow, I'm so blessed. I'm so grateful. I've got this gift, this skill set that I've worked really hard to build. I now want to use my gift and my time and my value to helping women be able to find their voice and use that confidently. And to the second part of your question, Michelle, I do think it is something that women struggle with more. Mm-hmm. And the reason I think that is because, especially women in corporate, these are organizations and structures that have been designed by a hand that is not our own. They have been written by a hand that is not our own. And what I mean by that is, more often than not, the corporations that we work for and the organizations that we work in are made by men for men. And time is changing, and that's fantastic. And we're seeing these changes happen, and that's really exciting. But you mentioned to me beforehand, you're the board on many ASX companies, and you're the only women on some of those boards. And that's still the reality of the world that we live in. So in an environment where men have felt encouraged to have their voice heard, and men have felt empowered to, you know, jostle with the team players and to argue across the table, as women, we have to feel grateful and lucky to be at the table in the first place. And so we don't have that audacious voice. We don't have that persuasive conviction of, yes, this is what I want to say, and this is how I want to say it. We more often than not have felt almost like an imposition. And I also just want to be very, very conscious with this topic. This is such a huge diverse topic, and I never want to generalize or categorize a large group of women into one group. I'm very, very conscious of that in podcast interviews like this. This is my lived experience and the lived experience of women that I've worked with. But I also know that we have women in our society that are completely disrupting that norm and that feel really confident in those rooms, which is so incredible. And that makes me so happy and so thrilled to hear that we're building that courage in those spaces. But I think the reason that I work with women and I do this work for women is because we are the ones that don't feel as confident in our spaces. And we are the ones who are more often not just really overqualified and really know our shit. But when push comes to shove, as I said, we don't speak up and we tend to shut down. And that's why building that trust in your voice and having the trust in yourself to say what you want to say is definitely something we need to be talking more about.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you'd say, I mean, my experience is often it's those that are super experienced and super knowledgeable. They're the quietest on the stuff that you're like, hang on a minute, you know this topic. You've been studying it for 10 years or 20 years or whatever. And why don't you want to talk about it? It's almost that, you know, when you get somebody that's brand new, I mean, you see it in social media all the time, those with little experience that are very vocal. And it's almost that they don't know what they don't know. So, you know, they kind of don't give a shit. And I always think about it as well when I was like a 20-year-old or whatever, and the stuff I'd do and say and whatever. I'm like, wow, I was so ballsy. Now I'm like, I'm not sure I'd do that. As you gain more wisdom, I guess, as you get older. So, I mean, I talk about my experience of what I've kind of gone through, and also what a lot of my friends and I've talked about. A lot of the time it's, you know, you're nervous about judgment. And you're always worried about, oh, what's that person going to think? Or what are those people going to say about me? And, you know, that's a natural defense mechanism. But how do you help your clients through that? What do you say about that going, oh, but I'm worried about this person, you know, my boss listening to that? Or for me, you know, it was like speaking about certain things, I'd worry about the chairman of the different boards I'm on having an opinion about the stuff I'm saying. And, you know, even though it's completely different, you know, sector and it's in my own time and stuff, but I'd be conscious about that. So what's your take on that? How do you advise people to kind of work through that?
I always say, as a society, I don't believe that we have a fear of public speaking. I think that we have a fear of judgment when speaking.
Yes.
Because we speak every single day. Like, we speak to our barista, we speak to the person at the supermarket, we speak to our neighbors. Like, when you close your eyes and think of public speaking, we think of the red curtain and the microphone in the middle of the stage and speaking to an audience of thousands. I think that's a really outdated perception of what public speaking is. And I think that image of public speaking is what's preventing a lot of people from actually getting into it and becoming more affluent in the skill. Fear of judgment, fear of failure, fear of rejection, they're three of the highest fears that we have. And they're very real fears. And I never try and underplay that, nor do I ever want to in public speaking, because it's a very real reality when you're speaking in front of people and you're worried about what people think or what they will say. Controversially, I actually think fear of judgment is a really good thing. I think it keeps our ego in check. And I think it helps us stay a little bit grounded and a little bit humble. And I think when we have no fear of judgment, we have no fear of what other people think or say. Sometimes we can cross boundaries. Sometimes we can hurt feelings. Sometimes we can speak out of turn. So there's a wealth percentage of fear of judgment. But what we don't want is, we don't want the fear to prevent you from speaking up in the first place, right? So one of the reframes, I'll just give you a little indication that I like to use a lot of my clients, is often when we speak, we have this fear of the what ifs. So you mentioned before, like, what if people judge me? What if people laugh at me? What if I say the wrong thing? What if the PowerPoint fails? Right? What if I make a joke and it doesn't land? All these different things. I love to reframe that to even if the PowerPoint fails, I would have learned the next time to set it up earlier beforehand. Or even if my message doesn't land, I trust that my teammates are going to communicate that with me when I finish and I'm going to learn my next presentation. Even if the joke doesn't land, I would have learned that maybe it wasn't the most appropriate one to use and I'll get adequate feedback on that the next time. Even if my colleagues judge me, I'm working so hard on trusting in my own voice and my own message. And once again, I'm going to be accepting of that feedback and work on it the next time. So I think public speaking is very similar to running, in the sense where I've had this belief, Michelle, since I was maybe 14 or 15 years old, that I just hate running. I remember when I was in school, we had the athletics carnival. I got an asthma attack during the 400 meter sprint. And since then I was like, no, just not for me. And it's interesting because I've restarted my running journey in the past 6 months. And I have a point to this, I promise. When I started the journey, I had set this expectation of, I'm going to run a marathon, right? It's like, yes, I'm going to do it. Now, if I were to compare this to somebody who's starting out a public speaking, that might be, I'm going to deliver a TED talk, right? Or I'm going to do this big presentation in front of my colleagues. Or I'm going to be able to stand up, make no mistakes, feel no fear of judgment, and do an amazing job, right? To say I was humbled when I couldn't run fucking 300 meters is an understatement. Like, huffing, tripping over myself, sweating. Oh my Lord. I'm thinking, people do this for fun? Like, what the hell?
Hilarious.
When I started my public speaking journey, I was the same. I've fainted on stage. I've tripped over microphone cords. I've poured a glass of water and missed the water entirely and just spilled water all over the stage. I've had all of these fuck-ups that have happened. I've made all of these mistakes.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest thing I say with fear of judgment is, if you're coming into this skill with the expectation that you will get rid of fear of judgment, that you will get rid of nerves, that you will not make mistakes, I'm sorry, but you're not a public speaker. That's not how it works. It's a rite of passage. And you know this, Michelle, you do a lot of speaking. It is a rite of passage as a speaker to make mistakes when you speak. It's
yeah,
and grow.
That's it. And I think that the worst thing is that, like, to analyze. I'm such an analytic brain as well. And so I'll come off stage and they'll pick apart everything. I'm like, oh, that was bad. And this, why did I do that? And I get real stressed about it. And then you have someone come up to you and go, you just like said something that resonated, and they'll get really upset and then you forget about it. And it's like, nobody saw all that little crap. You know, to me, it wasn't 100% right, but most people, it's like anything in life, they don't see all the failures and the things that we do wrong, right?
Absolutely. We get so in our own head. And I remember one of my most memorable examples of that. When I was 17 years old, I had the honor and the privilege of traveling to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I was one of the participants in the World Debating and Public Speaking Championships. And I was representing Australia.
Like the fact that you came from having a lisp to, you know, and crippling to that at 17, and then now the job you do is outstanding. Like it's unbelievable, you know, the journey that you've been on to get there and do what you do. So I just want to acknowledge that because, you know, I've been following you for a while because I really love what you do, how you speak about stuff, how you really completely own your own authenticity. So I just have to say that I'm a big fan.
Oh, that's so beautiful to receive. Thank you. And look, that's really beautiful to hear because I feel like we don't often get those mirroring moments when people are like, hey, dude, can you pause for a second and just look at how far you've come? Mm-hmm. So that's really, really special. So thank you for saying that. I really received that. So I'd been at this competition, which, you know, freaking incredible. So cool. Also like biggest nerd ever to be at the World Championships of Public Speaking. But I owned it at the time. I was like walking around in my customized blazer like, yeah, bitch, you know I'm top shit. Like I really owned that. And I remember, Michelle, I had gotten into the finals, me and five other students in the world. It's a really big deal.
Amazing.
And I remember I was standing up in front of the whole group of judges, participants, and I got about 3 minutes into my speech. And I had what felt like the biggest mental blank that I've ever had in my entire life. And I just froze. And it felt like my entire body shut down. It felt like my brain was just rolling black and blank. I had nothing coming through. And it was the worst feeling. And I'm almost looking down at my feet being like, please swallow me whole. And I've got all these people hanging on like bated breath. I remember finishing that speech and eating myself up thinking, you idiot, like you knew this back to front. This is your one opportunity. How the hell could you let that happen? And then the funniest thing, I remember when we received the videos and I watched back in my body, it genuinely, without exaggeration, felt like a 25-second pause. Yeah. It felt like a lifetime on stage. On the video, it was 3 seconds.
Yeah, wow.
It was a blip. And the reason I share that was to your point, we get so in our head and we so quickly internalize, like so often other people don't even notice and we make it such a big deal within ourselves. So this is why I always say, just like get out there, give it a go, trust in yourself and just put yourself out there and give yourself the patience and the grace to be bad at something before you get better at it. Because the more that we expect ourselves to be amazing at it, the less likely we're going to be so. And that's very similar to you shared with me that you do pottery. The very first time I did pottery and I walked into that class with the confidence of, I don't even know who. I was like, this is my new thing. I'm going to be the potterer. Like I'm going to make a masterpiece here. Right? And I did art in school. I literally broke down in tears from frustration because I couldn't even mold it into like the cup shape. It was so hard. And it challenged my ego so ferociously. It challenged my patience. It challenged my compassion. Everything was challenged in that moment. And I think that with any new skill, that is why it is so important to go back and try again. Because if we have that one experience and it doesn't go well, which let's be honest, more often than not, it won't go well the first time. If you have that experience and you just decide, yeah, well, that's not for me.
You know, one of the really good speakers back in the day, obviously, was Steve Jobs with Apple, and he would do all the launches, and I just watched because I was always such an Apple fan, right from, you know, the first ever massive iPod that I had changed my life. And just the way he spoke, you know, it was just perfect and all the things, and I just used to be in awe of him. And then I learned, I don't know whether it was when he bought the book out or people started talking about his whole process, and that how he would do a full entire run through. He would practice until the nth degree, like every single nuance and word and, you know, the things that he did. And I was like, wait, what? Like, I just go on stage, I don't even practice. And then I expect that I'm like, why the hell didn't I do a good job? And I'm thinking, that's really interesting. It sort of really changed my approach to that because I was like, I used to just wing it all the time and think, well, I should know this. Like I should be able to just speak off the cuff, but to be able to do that like an actor does, I guess, as well, they have practiced those lines time and time again, hundreds if not thousands of times. They've practiced the nuance and the movement and their, you know, walk on the stage and all the things. And it was a really good lesson for me to learn to say, you know, actually, I need to have a different approach to be professional at this. Then it's not a bad thing to practice, because I saw that as like a negative. But to your point about learning something new and continually refining your craft, I guess, is a really good thing to know.
Absolutely. And I think this is such a cool component with trust as well, is we often expect immediate gratification or an immediate reward when we choose to trust, right? When we choose to fail and fall and fumble. Like I love yoga, and something my yoga instructor always says is, if you don't wobble and fall, you won't get better and you won't grow. So allow yourself to wobble and fall and smile when you do, right? You have to wobble and fall, because you have to have those experiences where you fall, you get back up, your body and your muscle build that strength, you do it again and again and again. And I think with trust, at least in my experience, we don't often get an instant reward for that trust. And we don't often get people who validate you for that, or then the gratification for that. So I think the patience and the compassion, it's almost like a Venn diagram. Like, you know, trust can't really exist without patience on the journey and without compassion for yourself, because you have to be patient to see the growth. And you have to be compassionate with yourself in order to enjoy the journey, because otherwise we sit in the guilt and the shame and the self-deprecation, and we just think, well, why the hell would I do any of this? It just all feels too much. It all feels too hard. I don't enjoy not being good at something immediately. I don't enjoy the discomfort, right? So I'd say, to your point, those are two very important components. And actually, on the Steve Jobs thing, I remember reading Steve Jobs would practice an average of twice a day for 3 months before any pitch he would do, because these were million, sometimes billion-dollar pitches. So he was absolutely refining and practicing his craft for an average of 3 months before any presentation. And I think it goes to show as well, when we see somebody, like when I, for example, on my running journey, I open up social media and another person just run a marathon, I'm thinking, oh my God, it's so easy for them. Like, bloody hell, I'll never be able to do that. I don't see the mornings where they wake up at 5 a.m. and go for a really difficult 5K run. I don't see the afternoons where they finished work and then they decide to put on their running shoes and go for a slow 10K. Yeah, I don't see any of that. We see the finished product. We don't see the work that's involved. So I think that's a very important component as well, is really trusting in your own lane and trusting that your path, you're allowed to be in your own lane at your own speed, even if other people are going at different speeds as well.
Yeah, it's such a good point. And I think people need to realize that you're on your own journey all the time. So I want to get into some nitty gritty. I mean, you have your business is called Her Speaking Coach. And for those listening, not everyone does what you and I do and speak, you know, at different events and have a chance to do that. But my take is a bit like yours. You're speaking all the time, you know, whether you're having a conversation with your family, your kids, your mates. Anytime you're talking to another person, to me, is public speaking, right? So that's how I've always looked at it. And we can all do that better. And one of the components of that, I think, is around, you don't need to speak more to get your word across. Sometimes you need to articulate things differently. And often there's so much power in listening and actually just saying, you know, my dad was amazing. He was a man of few words, but when he spoke, we all listened. Like, oh, dad's making some profound statement, you know. You know, you talked about reframing before, which was that beautiful element about even if. What other things that you find with your work that are common threads that people need, you know, reminding, or that are great tips that have really shifted people in this space, Annalise?
There's so many. And I think it's really important to recognize, first and foremost, speaking is such a massive web. So there are so many different components and elements. I mean, first, if we were to look at the physiological side of speaking, that's all about our body. So, you know, our physical delivery, our breath, controlling our central nervous system. We then have how we actually present, what we do with our hands, what we do with our voice, our face. We then have the psychological side of speaking, which is what's happening up here in our brain. How do we structure our thoughts? How do we articulate our words? How do we remain compassionate and calm in moments where we feel out of control? So, so many things I could share in this. The most commonly asked question I get as a speaking coach, which is, how do you get rid of filler words? It's funny, because I think a lot of people, we make filler the real enemy when we speak, because we think that saying and like and so and whatnot is a really bad thing. And I think I challenge that with, sometimes you need fillers to find flow. I mean, I don't know about you, Michelle, but I've never listened to somebody use a filler and go, oh God, well, you're not articulate. Like, I've literally never thought that.
It depends how many times they use it.
Exactly right. And to your point, what we don't want is, we don't want it to become a habit. And what happens with filler words, like so many habits that we speak, is they're subconscious. So with any habit that you might have, whether it's a filler word that you're aware of, or whether it's the fact that you speak really quickly, or maybe you're not projecting your voice and you're not really filling a room, with any of those habits, we need to first be conscious of it. Because I know it sounds so simple, but it's really important, because you can't change anything unless you're actually really aware that it's happening. So the biggest thing I invite all of my clients to do, people that I work with, is to use a voice recorder and a video recorder. And it's a really simple technique that you can start doing at home and in the comfort of your own home. And a lot of people immediately will be like, oh God, but I hate the sound of my voice and all, and I hate listening to it. And that's part of the journey, really, is learning to listen to ourselves and learning, what does my voice sound like when I speak? And does my voice go up at the end of my sentences? So it sounds like I'm asking a question all the time, even though I don't realize it. There's all these different habits that I'll just kind of plant that seed there. But if you want to become more aware of these habits that you are using, voice record and video record yourself, and really notice what your body's doing and what your voice is doing when you are speaking. And some of those key things that I'll address are, yes, the filler words. And I think becoming conscious of those, and essentially filler words replace pause. And when we don't pause, it's often because we're either uncomfortable with silence, or we're trying to get our thought out as quickly as we can. And so our pace starts to get really, really quick. And then we just run away with our train of thought and we don't pause at all. And so everything comes out with verbal diarrhea. I'm like, but we're not breathing, right? So it all comes out very quickly. On top of that, I think I would argue projection is one of the most underrated skills with speaking. And it says so much, because subconsciously, when you're projecting, you're telling me that you're okay with being heard. When you're projecting, you're telling me, I have a point here, I have an opinion, I have something to say, I'm not afraid for you to hear it. No matter what the point is, no matter what you're saying, if you're actually projecting your voice in a room, that subconsciously is demonstrating so much confidence in yourself, so much confidence in your voice. And so I'd say that those are a few with your voice that are really critical and really crucial to confident communication. But I also want to mention one that I think is very underrated and not often spoken about enough, and it's actually your facial expression. And it's really funny, because I've listened to some phenomenal speakers who actually have like quite a deadpan expression when they talk. And it's really eerie. I don't know if you experience that, Michelle, when you listen to people and they have a really animated or like really motivational voice, but nothing much happens with their face. And we are very much visual human beings. We're big visual learners. And so an invitation there for you, so that for those listening, with that video recorder at home, you know, set it up and watch what happens with your face when you speak. Are you moving your eyebrows? Are you engaging your facial muscles? Are you smiling when you talk? And these really, really small, minute habits that you'll start to build over time, this is the foundation to confident communication. This is the foundation to starting to speak more eloquently and more articulately in front of people. It's really these minute micro changes that we can make, and then start to obviously implement more and more and more over time.
What about if you're too expressive?
I think that that's really beautiful that you're super expressive. I think that that makes you very unique as a speaker. I know I would remember you if I watched you and you were really expressive. I'm highly expressive. I move my body a lot. I like to jump around, because also you would know as a speaker, your energy dictates the audience's energy. So if you are flatlining on stage, if you're not giving me anything as an audience member, I'm not giving you anything back. So it's my job to really lift the room. And to do that, I have to be really energetic and really energized. So yes, I guess overexpression can become a distraction if we're using gestures in a way that diminishes or distracts from our message rather than enhances it. But expression as a whole, it comes back to this notion of you being an authentic you and being an authentic speaker. I know that for me, my energy and my, I like to call zesty personality, is such a core component of me as a speaker. If you're hiring me as a speaker, your team is going to be dancing at one point. We're going to be chucking on some Beyonce and having a boogie. So it's really important to recognize as a speaker, like, what are your core values? Because if it's something that you feel is really integral to you as a speaker and you can't deliver authentically without it, then maybe it's about how can we fine tune our delivery so that maybe it is done in a more appropriate manner, but it doesn't compromise who you are as a speaker. Does that resonate?
Yeah, definitely. I'm conscious we're going to run out of time and I have so many other questions. We're talking about confidence and about, you know, trusting in yourself and your authentic self and stuff. Talk to me about dress code, especially in the corporate world. And, you know, you've been online a fair bit where you wear things that some would call verge on the edge of like lingerie on stage, which you look amazing in. They're not anything typically corporate. And also you get a bit of a caning for it, for people like having a go at you. and you handle it so well. And maybe, you know, wanted to finish with that about, again, as women, and I've been really critiqued throughout my life. I was in corporate through the 80s and 90s where you had to wear bloody, you know, power suits with the big shoulder pads, you know, slick my hair, crazy curly hair back and stuff, and be judged about how I look and present, which, you know, wasn't me at all. And the moment I started to feel more comfortable as I got older and really comfortable in my own skin and in my own look and feel, which is different to everyone else's, the better I became. But how do you kind of coach people through that? Because I love what you do in this space and the fact that you do not conform. It's wonderful.
Thank you. Well, I first just want to acknowledge my privilege as a business owner. And the reason I want to acknowledge that is because I recognize a lot of women who do work in corporation can't dress how I do. They can't wear the bright pink power suit. They can't show up in lingerie. So I think there is a lot of privilege in running your own show and creating your own personal brand. So I want to kind of recognize that first and foremost, that I have that autonomy to do that. But goddamn, am I going to use that autonomy to the best that I can and to inspire others, which is why I'm so grateful that you've recognized that. So just quickly, for anybody who's interested, if you go on my website, www.firstspeakingcoach.com, you scroll down, you'll see something that says core values. And there's five that are written. Back in the middle, it says fuck tradition, very clearly. And I think that pretty much sums up my mission with what I'm doing is I want to be a pattern interrupt. I want to make people question. I love when I get comments of people being like, oh my God, she shouldn't be wearing that. And that's not professional. Who are you to say it's not professional? People that pay my bill have never complained. I've got a very successful business and it's gone really well. Like I'm doing great. But I love that it is creating a conversation for people and a talking point where we can challenge this idea of professionalism. And I say that in quotations. What does it mean to be a professional businesswoman? Because I think as well, particularly in corporate, I had spent so much of my corporate life showing up as one of the blokes because I thought that I had to be super serious to be taken seriously. And I had to dress really seriously, really plain colors, really boring. And I want to recognize as well, there are some women who really love dressing that way. And there are some women who feel really empowered dressing that way. This is not me telling people what they should or should not wear. The message behind this is what makes you feel the most authentically and powerfully you? What allows you to show up feeling confident and feeling like you have complete ownership of who you are and what you do? And whatever that is, experiment with it until you can walk out of the house and look in the mirror and be like, damn, baby girl, you're looking good today. Like, that's what you want. You want to have that relationship with yourself. Because especially as a speaker, you're going to get scrutiny and you're going to get feedback and you're going to get people who either like you or they don't. So you might as well show up in a way that's authentic to you and deal with the repercussions, knowing at home you're comfortable with who you are, then show up as a version of you that you don't like to please everybody else, get negative feedback, and then go home being like, well, Jesus, who the hell am I and what am I doing?
What a beautiful message to finish on. I could literally talk to you for hours more, but we need to wind this up. Thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom. You know, so many great tips there for us, and I really appreciate what you do. So thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, Michelle, thank you for having me. And I completely echo, we could have carried on this conversation for a very long time. But for now, thank you so much for holding space and for having me. And I'm so, so appreciative to have been invited onto the podcast.
Take care. Have fun over in Bali. Well, there you have it. Wasn't that an incredible conversation? I hope you enjoyed it as much as I've enjoyed bringing it to you. If you did like it, can I ask a small favour? Please rate and review on your listening platform for me. I know everyone asks this, but it seriously makes a difference to help get these conversations out in the world and makes all the hard work and effort I put into this for you all the more worthwhile. And until next time, if you have one question you'd like to ask me, hit me up on my socials or jump on my website, michellejcox.com.